Hey y'all, it's Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. I'm a board-certified gynecologist, a clinical assistant professor of OBGYN at Northwestern Feinberg School of Medicine, and owner of a private practice for almost a decade that specializes in menopause and sexual medicine. I'm a South Asian American Muslim woman who is here to empower, educate, and help you advocate for health issues that have been stigmatized, shamed, and perhaps even prevented you from living your best life. I'm better than your best girlfriend and more open than most of your doctors. I'm here to educate so you can advocate. Welcome to Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Let's go.
Hey guys, it's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Welcome to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Today, you are in for a special treat, okay? I have a very lively discussion with a guest who is a friend of mine from Chicago, a colleague, an expert in so many things related to midlife and sexual medicine. But today, I want to introduce you to the podcast that I did with Dr. Lauren Stryker. She is an amazing sex med gynecologist as well as a midlife women's health specialist in menopause. She's been talking about menopause before it was cool to talk about menopause. And she is a best-selling author. She's been on tons of media outlets. She started the Sexual Medicine and Menopause Center at Northwestern University Medical Center, Feinberg School of Medicine. She does everything and anything. So she's pretty cool to talk to as well because she's hilarious. She comes with a wealth of knowledge and she's very evidence-based. So you guys are going to enjoy this discussion because we're going to talk about orgasm dysfunction and not just any kind of orgasm dysfunction, really acquired orgasm dysfunction related to midlife women. And we delve into what happens when you're on SSRIs. We talk about what happens when you have multiple comorbidities like diabetes, hypertension, metabolic syndrome, and whether or not we should be using, is Viagra good for women? We get into that discussion because, you know, no one really talks on that. And then she also, you can also find out what happens when a sex med gynecologist has children and what they become in life because she talks about her amazing daughter who is a sex therapist. And so we're going to get into it. So please join us. Let's get at it. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me. It's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. I'm here today with my podcast, Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm really excited. I'm super excited to have my friend and colleague, Dr. Lauren Stryker, here today. If you think about menopause and midlife, she is the OG. Menopause midlife has been talking about it for a very long time before it was hip to talk about. She has done so much in this field and is such an expert and talks to women in a way that I think really resonates with them. Very funny too. If you've ever heard her present, she's hilarious. She's a professor at the Northwestern School of Medicine, Feinberg School of Medicine. She started their Sexual Medicine and Menopause Center. She's been on every media outlet you could imagine. She has written many books that are bestsellers. Her newest one are a series of books about midlife. One of the first ones was Hot Flash Hell and also Slip Sliding Away. Is that right?
Slip Sliding Away, Turning Back the Clock on Your Vagina.
Yeah. Slip Sliding Away, Turning Back the Clock on Your Vagina. And today we are going to talk about her newest book that's going to come out soon. And it's all about the big O because nobody addresses the big O when it comes to midlife women. You can look at all the menopause books. I kind of looked at into that before I wanted to talk to her. I'm like, is anyone addressing the big O in midlife women? And no. So I'm super excited for Dr. Lauren Stryker to tell us about everything she's been doing. Oh, she also has an amazing podcast. I recommend it every day to my midlife patients because it's just so thorough, so evidence-based, and so like just easily digestible.
Dr. Stryker's Inside Information, Menopause, Midlife, and More.
There you go. So it's really good, guys. And I don't know, it's been what, 2 years now, Lauren?
I just started season 3. I cannot believe it.
Oh, wonderful.
Last in March, 2 years ago. Wow. So heading into season 3.
Oh, wow. My goodness. It's really good. And like I said, I recommend it to my patients all the time. So please welcome Dr. Lauren Stryker. We're so excited to have you here today.
Well, thank you for having me. And it's just so funny how you say nobody talks about orgasm. You talk about orgasm.
I talk about orgasm, but I'm not writing about it right now.
Exactly. But no, but it's important. And that's what I love about you is as you go there. You go there with all the topics that, quite frankly, a lot of people are not all that eager to have me get out there and get into the details.
And I think that it's a very neglected topic. I had Dr. Lori Mintz on a few weeks ago.
And we talked about her.
Awesome, isn't she? She talked about, you know, all the great things that she loves to talk about, the orgasm gap and all the statistics around that. And as a sex therapist, how she kind of like works with that.
Yeah. But, you know, what's so interesting about that book about Clitoracy and Lori, and I interviewed her on my podcast during season one, and I'm going to connect with her again shortly. And I actually quote her book a number of times. Mm-hmm. And the thing about her book is I look at it as the perfect companion for my book. Because my book is the biologic, medical, hormonal, physical, anatomic reasons that someone has difficulty with orgasm. Right. What Dr. Mintz is talking about, of course, is much more the psychosocial issues, the cultural issues in terms of the orgasm gap.
Yeah.
And how we really have to change our discussion around women's sexuality. So it's like, okay, you start with her book.
Yes.
And then if you can't have an orgasm because in spite of doing all the right things, nothing is happening,
right,
then you read my book.
Yeah. And I think I saw yesterday a CNN article that you were quoted on about, well, we can just dive right into some of the topics that you're discussing. But because this is relevant, I'm talking to you today and it's March 22nd. Yesterday, you had been quoted in a CNN article about antidepressants and sexual function. And we know that when you get all that serotonin on board, you can really blunt your sexual function, including orgasm. So do you want to talk a little about that, Arlen?
You know, what's so funny about that article is you do a lot of interviews for the media as well. Mm-hmm. And you do these articles and honestly, you forget about them.
Yeah.
Because three times a week, you get someone contacts you and says, oh, can we talk to you about strip? You say, sure.
Yeah.
And then you forget about it.
Yeah.
So the CNN article, I don't even remember when we had the conversation. I honestly completely forgot about it. And then it went live yesterday, which coincidentally was the exact same day that my podcast went live about the impact of SSRI.
Oh my God. That's so funny, actually.
It wasn't planned at all, but it was just kind of like, oh, wow, that was meant to be, that this is the week that I talk about
antidepressants.
And so, yeah, it is an interesting topic. But the thing that really struck me as I was preparing my podcast and when I was talking to the CNN writer is the number of midlife women that are taking SSRIs.
SSRIs, right? Yeah.
We are talking 1 out of 4 women by the time you hit 60 are taking an SSRI, which is crazy.
Right.
But when you think about why, that's really the important part, because when you think about why and when they started it, most of these women were put on SSRIs during perimenopause. Why? Because they were having changes and because they were having hot flashes and they were either told or believed that they could not take hormone therapy. And therefore, the default was to put them on an SSRI. And so you suddenly have this enormous population, millions of women.
Millions.
Perimenopause women and postmenopause women who are taking an SSRI to deal with symptoms that could be managed with other ways that are not going to make them gain weight and are not going to make their orgasm go away and that are not going to take away their libido.
Right.
And yet this is the go-to. I don't know when this happened that an SSRI became the first line treatment for women who are struggling with menopause.
Right.
So let's just start with that.
Yeah.
And I'm not minimizing the people who have anxiety and depression that predated perimenopause and are appropriately need to be on an SSRI. But those are not the big numbers. The big numbers are the ones who were put on just for that reason. And to that point, last night I was doing a talk to a group of women here in Chicago, where we both are. And it was a group of very, very bright, educated women who had brought me in to talk on this topic. And one of the attendees said to me, she goes, look, I'm a doctor. She was a pediatrician. She said, I'm a doctor. Perfect. And when I went through perimenopause and started having these symptoms, I went to my OBGYN and said, I'm having these symptoms. What should I do? And she gave me a prescription for an SSRI. And he said to her, I don't want an SSRI. I want hormone therapy. No, no, no. We start with this. And then if this doesn't work, then, and this is a Northwestern doctor. You know who this is. No names. Yeah. And then if this doesn't work, then maybe we'll reluctantly try hormone therapy. And she said, well, I don't like that idea.
Right.
So she went to her internist and her internist said, you know, oh, no, 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 no hormone therapy. You get the picture.
Right.
She went to three different doctors before she finally found someone who would prescribe her hormone therapy, which took away all of her symptoms, and she's perfectly happy.
Right.
But had she not been an educated, savvy physician patient,
right. He
never would have known and would have thought that hormone therapy was out of the question. Okay, but so we got off track here, because what you want to talk about is what's going on when you take an SSRI.
Yep.
Well, let's start with how many women actually have sexual side effects. And when you look at the data, it's kind of all over the map.
Right.
And most data is in that 30 to 50% range of people that have some kind of a sexual side effect. And there are other factors, of course, that go into it. And some of these women already come to the table with sexual pain or other reasons that just gets exacerbated. But if you just look at de novo, you know, a woman who's having no problems and she starts her SSRI and suddenly her libido's in the toilet and she can't have an orgasm, that seems to be around 30 to 50%, which is really high.
High.
Really, really high.
Alarmingly.
So then you say, okay, well, why does this happen? And as you said, this is really about, it's all about the neurotransmitters. You know, dopamine is, I always say dopamine is all about, you know, sex all the time. You're feeling dopey with love. You want your dopamine to be high. Serotonin is stop, you know, stop thinking about it, do the laundry, go to work, do something else. And it's this balance, right? And so what happens when you take an SSRI is your dopamine goes down and your serotonin goes up, because in someone's depressed, their serotonin is low and you want it to go higher.
Right.
So it's good for depression, but it's not good for your sex life. So that's why it's happening as far as libido. The question is, well, what does this have to do with orgasm? Because when you think about orgasm, what you and I think about and talk about all the time is what's going on down in the clitoris.
Right.
Do you have a good blood supply? Are those nerve endings sensitive? Are they firing off? Are your pelvic floor muscles contracting? So where does dopamine and serotonin come in with that? Well, where it really comes in is that what we're looking at is what's going on in the brain, because the brain is the one that's talking to your clitoris.
That's the biggest sexual organ, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's saying, okay, hello, respond, getting those pleasure centers ready, getting ready to trigger, all of that. So mostly when you look at sexual side effects with SSRIs, it's mostly libido issues.
Right.
But for a lot of women, it's orgasm as well. And then the downstream effects of if you have no libido and you don't get aroused because you have to have arousal for orgasm.
Right.
So it's complicated, but it's also simple.
Right.
You know,
you
load your body with the wrong neurotransmitters and it's going to put things to a dead stop.
Right.
So then this, as we, you know, go on, you say, okay, well then what are you going to do about this? And sometimes it's going to go away on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wait it out, very often, you know, that just a little time. But if you're like 4 or 5 months into it and nothing's changing, chances are it's not going to. And that's the point when you say, okay, well, let's start to look at other strategies. And I always preface this by saying what you and I always say is this is not a do-it-yourself project.
Right.
If you're going to mess with your SSRI, please talk to the clinician that actually prescribed it, because some things you can mess with yourself. I mean, like when you and I talk about vaginal estrogen, it's like, have at it. You know, you want to use less, you want to use more, who cares? But with an SSRI, you know, you can talk to the person that prescribed it. Yeah. But sometimes you can lower the dosage and that will help. Sometimes you can switch to a completely different antidepressant. Some SSRIs are worse than others, but there's also other antidepressants. And it also depends. Are you treating hot flashes or are you treating anxiety or depression?
Exactly. So
depending on what you're treating is going to determine alternatives.
Right.
Now, of course, the obvious alternative is that if you're treating your hot flashes and if you're treating perimenopausal things, and if you think you're not a candidate for hormone therapy, chances are that's not true.
Right.
You know, even, I mean, we could even talk about women with a breast cancer diagnosis, which is really not science-based that they don't take hormone therapy.
Exactly.
But certainly if somebody doesn't have a breast cancer diagnosis, there's very few reasons in the world that someone cannot safely take hormone therapy.
Exactly.
But assuming that that's someone doesn't want to go that route, you know, a lot of people just prefer to avoid hormone therapy. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you can talk about lowering the dosage. You can talk about changing to a different antidepressant.
Stop your antidepressants though.
Yeah. Well, there's the drug holiday thing, you know, where you're like, okay,
you're
going to stop it on Thursday, Fridays.
Yeah.
And with the idea that it's going to be out of your system enough for the Saturday, Sunday. And there was one study that I talk about in my podcast that actually does seem to help and did not have a negative impact on mental health. And in fact, it actually improved it, which I think is because people were like happy they were having sex. So they about their mental health. I don't know. But the really interesting story is the whole Viagra story, the sildenafil story. So do you prescribe Viagra for women with?
I do, and do it topically, and I sometimes I'll do it orally too. Let's talk about it because the urologists always say that when men have erectile dysfunction, it's your first sign that something might be happening cardiovascularly or neurologically. But no one talks about what's happening to the clitoris in midlife. Comes to the neurovascular bundles down there, and how Viagra may or may not help with that.
Yeah,
but with midlife, right? You have the diabetes, the hypertension that might come along, and how let's talk about that.
Well, absolutely. And when you talk about who's at the highest risk for having, when we talk about you and I, what we're talking about is acquired orgasmic dysfunction, which is very different than the person who's never had an orgasm. That's a whole different situation. We're talking about women who say, I used to have orgasms just fine. And then something changed and now I can't, even when I do all my tried and true things that always worked for me before.
Right.
And as you said, you need healthy nerves, you need healthy blood supply. And if something changes, that's an indication that something is up as far as the blood supply or as far as the nerve endings. And just like with the guys, I mean, the penis is a big clitoris. And so there's a lot of similarities, but the difference is that the nerve endings and the blood supply and the clitoris are much smaller and more vulnerable. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
And remember when was it about a year ago when they came out and they said there was 10,000?
Yeah.
Oh, this is so great. This is so exciting. And I did a blog post or something. This is nothing to be happy about. This just means they're even smaller than you thought. You know, this is like an area the size of a pea, and you've got 10,000 nerves in there, and people are happy. I'm thinking,
I remember your blog that day. I was like, yeah, that's exactly right.
Right. So to your point, it's the people with, diabetes, it's the people with vascular problems who it's going to be the first to go. And so the whole idea of is Viagra going to help? And we don't have good data. We have very bad data. If you look, I've looked at every single study that's ever been done on the use of Viagra in women, and they're lousy studies. I mean, you and I talk all the time about you can't just, take a study at face value. You have to look at it. How many people were in it? Was it a placebo-controlled trial? Yeah. How long did it last? Who did they exclude? Who was part of it? All that stuff. So the studies are terrible. They're really not good. They're very inconsistent. But the groups that it did seem to help the most, and I'm talking about an oral Viagra, which is FDA approved for guys, of course, not for women. But the group that it seemed to help the most was women with SSRI induced problems with orgasm, women with multiple sclerosis, and diabetics. But honestly, the testing and the data is so just not adequate. And I think you and I can, I mean, we're very data driven, but sometimes when there is no data, you kind of have to go on your own experience.
Right.
And certainly I have found that for many, many women, it has been helpful, even if they don't fall into the specific, areas that we're talking about. And then there's the topical stuff. Are you prescribing the compounded topical sildenafil?
But I have done the oral stuff, because I as a South Asian, you probably know the statistic. We make up 25% of the world population, but 67% of the world diabetes and heart disease. So, South Asians, I'm always asking them about orgasms in midlife, and they're like non-existent because there's so many diabetics and so many hypertensives. So those are the ones I'm like, Just
Alex syndrome, all of it.
I know your husband's on Viagra. Like, let's just take a pill and try it. And so, you know, some of them have had success.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the topical stuff that's, you know, right now in clinical trials, and you can get it compounded, and, you know, there's that as well. So, yeah. And I think
about the clinical trial. What do you think about that so far?
Well, we don't know a lot about it. And, you know, basically all we know is that it's a 3.5% sildenafil cream. And with the idea of they're talking about it as an arousal cream as opposed to an orgasm cream. And I think that that's really just to get it through the FDA, quite frankly. And you need arousal to orgasm, and arousal leads to orgasm. So we all know what we're really talking about. But I mean, I've heard through the grapevine that the results are promising. I've also heard through the grapevine that they are not including postmenopause women in their trials, only premenopause, which we've already seen this story with flibanserin and bremelanotide, because it's easier to get it through the FDA if you don't include postmenopause women, because postmenopausal women have too many variables that makes it trickier. So even assuming that it will get approved, and I assume that it will, because it appears to be effective. I doubt that it has a lot of side effects, but it's going to be approved probably just for premenopause women, which doesn't mean we can't use it. Of course we use it. We do these things all the time. It just means the insurance isn't going to cover it, which is
ruthless. Right. You just have to pay out of pocket like every other thing that, you know, midlife women have to do because, you know, like you said, the flibanserin and bremelanotide are not covered.
It's a problem.
I don't know. Like, is that, it's the whole FDA's issue that they won't approve it for. Well, they wouldn't include them in the study, but the studies for the other, for like flibanserin and Vyleesi are there for postmenopausal women. Looks good, I think. So
we have the data that shows that it works, and we know that it's safe. So, you know, I think a lot of people get confused about the term off label.
Right. Exactly.
You know, off label doesn't mean it's illegal or inappropriate. It just means that's not what the FDA cleared it for. You know, the example I always give is birth control pills, because how many people take birth control pills for cramps and for heavy bleeding? Guess what? That's off label. The birth control pill is only FDA approved for contraception. That's it.
So that's very interesting. Oh, so I was going to ask you too. I think, I don't know if you, did you tell me that? Because I know your daughter is a sex therapist, right? And I want to say, did you say that she's helping me with the book at some point? Did you tell me?
Yeah. So what we decided to do is, when I was writing this book, and of course I was only writing the medical aspects of it, but orgasm more than anything else I've ever written about, and libido, you can't ignore the psychosocial impact. You just can't. And a few books ago, my book, Sex RX, Hormones, Health, and Your Best Sex Ever, which was a comprehensive sexual medicine book. And I ended up writing about some of the psychosocial stuff, but, you know, I always felt like, you know, stay in your lane. That's not my thing. That's not my expertise. And certainly you and I speak to that all the time, because that's just part of what we do. But that's really not what we're trained to do. And I thought, okay, I have a daughter who has a PhD in this stuff, and she is an extraordinarily talented, not only therapist and sex therapist, but you may not know about her, this about her. She was a journalist before she went. Yeah. She was a journalist in New York, and she started writing health stories, doing freelance stuff just to get a little extra money. And then she had interviewed a sex therapist about something and said, well, this is interesting. How did you get that job? And it was so interesting that she literally moved back to Chicago, went to Northwestern, got her master's, and then ultimately got her PhD and is now an ASEX certified sex therapist. But the point is, she's a really good writer. And so when I started writing this book, and I thought, okay, this is something that we can collaborate on. We've collaborated on a lot of things. And she just finished her own book, which she's in the process of getting published. So we've done on pelvic pain, completely different topic. And so I said, you want to join in? You want to be part of this project? And she said, sure. So she is writing all the psychosocial aspects. Her name is Rachel Zarr. It's a different last name. She's a very good writer. She's very clever. And in fact, she came up with the title of the book, which is Come Again. A Guide to Midlife.
I love it.
She's really good. So yes, we are working on this together, and we do a lot of stuff together. We do a lot of talks together. She's been on my podcast as a guest many times. I think my favorite episode that she did was faking orgasm. You know, why would you fake it? And
I love it.
Men fake too. Yeah. But so, yeah. So my daughter is collaborating with me, but we're actually, the way we decided to do it, we kind of went back and forth, is I have my chapters and she has her section. Like, we're not like incorporating it into it. It's like, okay, I'm writing all the meat of it in terms of the, and then she's got a whole another 5 or 6 chapters at the end, which are all the psychosocial things. And I told her, you take the chapter on how do you buy a vibrator and how do you talk to your partner about using the vibrator and all that kind of stuff. So we're really having fun with it.
Yeah. So if you ever wonder what a sex med gynecologist kids turn out to be.
My other child therapist, and we can't even say vagina in the room with her because she covers her ears and goes running away.
It's so, one extreme or the other.
Well, unbelievable. I mean, she's so funny because we all grew up, you know, in this, and they all grew up in the same, the same house. And she, it's so weird. It's so funny because when she was little, you know, well, even when she was in grammar school and high school, she was the one that was, you have a period problem, come to me. You know, we thought she was going to go to medical school because she loved talking about the medical stuff. And then she ended up being a therapist. And no, she does not want to talk about it.
That's so funny. Yeah, I have two daughters, and one of them, when I did her puberty talk at school, because she's 11, she's like, I can't believe this is what you decided to spend your life doing. And then my 5-year-old, when I took my girls to see Barbie, and there's that whole scene where they say, where she says, I don't have a vagina, and he doesn't have a penis. And my 5-year-old blurts out, but mama, we have vaginas, don't we? Like, all the whole, like, 3 people turned around and looked at me with evil eyes. Like, why is your 5-year-old saying vagina?
But listen, I have a 2-year-old granddaughter who proudly told me that this is my vulva. So
there you go. I love it.
You know, but seriously, I think, but you know, just to circle back to the whole orgasm thing, women do not know where their clitoris is. They are taught that this part of their body is shameful, that not only do you not talk about it, but you certainly don't touch it. And no one points out to them, you know, where things are and what to do. And guys obviously have the advantage that they don't need instruction.
Right,
it's just sitting right there for them to, they're 2 years old and they know what to do with it, and everything just works out fine. And so many times when a woman has never had an orgasm, it's because no one has told her that needs clitoral stimulation or how that's going to happen. And then when you have someone who develops a problem later in life, as we've been talking about, there's such shame about the fact that they even do want that pleasure or miss that pleasure or expect that pleasure. They don't talk about it, and their doctors aren't asking them.
Yeah.
You and I know that. Every time we talk to a group of women, and it doesn't matter how big the group is, it could be 50, it could be 500. And I say, raise your hand if your doctor has ever asked you if you can have an orgasm. And generally not one single hand goes up, because doctors don't ask that.
Yeah.
They just don't. So here we have this enormous population of women that are struggling, that this is really frustrating, making them really unhappy, impacting on their sexuality, on their self-identity, on their sense of self-worth, on their relationship, all of that. And yet they feel like this isn't something they can talk about with their doctor. And if they do, because doctors aren't trained in this stuff, they'll say something like, well, you know, this just happens when you get older. End of discussion. So, I mean, it all comes back, and we, you know, circling back to, how do you approach sexuality with your kids? How do we approach sex education? You know, sex education, instead of it being, this is, it shouldn't just be about, you know, how to not get pregnant and how not to get a sexually transmitted infection. It should be about pleasure.
Right.
And it never is.
Right. It never is. And, you know, any other layers on top of that, cultural taboos or whatever, religious taboos, you're never going to hear about it. So
that's right. That's right.
What other issues around acquired orgasms does your book kind of delve into, other than the psychosocial stuff?
You know, well, it's interesting because when I first kind of mapped out this book, I think I had 12 chapters. I'm now up to 32.
32. Is it bigger than your other books? Because, well, you know, your other books.
Yeah. It's bigger. And I didn't mean for it to be, but this is the problem. You know, you and I both gone down that rabbit hole, that you start to research something and suddenly it's like, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So, you know, I really, really do the deep dive into What are the medical conditions? What is the impact of things like alcohol and cannabis? What is the impact of when you do have nerve damage? What are your solutions? What can you do? You know, not everyone, we talked about Viagra. That's obviously not going to be the solution for everybody. So I talk a lot about the different options there are in terms of increasing arousal, increasing clitoral blood flow, making those nerve endings more sensitive, you know, even for something as obvious to us and as simple as use a vibrator. For a lot of women, not only is this something they haven't thought about, but it's kind of shocking, you know, that a doctor would say,
here's a prescription for a vibrator.
And I call it a sexual tool, not a sexual toy, because this isn't just to make things more fun. It's to make things happen. It's to make it possible like any other tool. And we use so many tools in medicine that we don't think of these devices as being tools, but they really are. And I think we need to frame it that way. And this is something that we write prescriptions. When I first went to Northwestern and started the sexual medicine, and I suggested to him that we really, really, really should, in our clinic, sell vibrators and lubricants and books and educational materials, not only to make it easy and accessible to our patients, but really acknowledging that most of these women are not going to be comfortable going on Amazon and buying a vibrator.
Take it home from the doctor's office.
They're not going to necessarily walk into a sex store. And just like when they go to the dermatologist and you walk out with $9 million worth of creams and ointments for your skin, that when they come to the sexual medicine or to the menopause clinic, I would like them to walk out with a nice goodie bag of things that are really going to help them. And so then I revisit. Exactly. So I revisited about a year later.
Yeah.
Because have you ever been to the center? That, you know, anyway, I don't know if you remember, but there's this area when you walk in right past the waiting room that's like this nook that would have been perfect to like have, you know, a display shelf with all this stuff. And then someone could discreetly order it and walk out with their bag. And they had like a dying plant there. And I said, you know, this would be a really good place to put our vibrator display and our lubricant display. No, but seriously, this is an issue that you have a major medical center that's dealing with real life medical problems, and we have real tools and solutions. And yet I'm being told that you cannot sell vaginal dilators here.
Right.
You cannot sell lubricants here. You cannot sell all of these things that you and I are recommending on a daily basis that really help our patients. And they just say no.
And that's a big problem in our medical community, just not taking the issues around sexual dysfunction seriously. And I mean, it's enough not to ask. And then the people that are asking want to help people, and we can't even, you know, get to that next level.
Yeah. So therein lies the one of many issues.
Right, exactly. Well, I think it's a perfect way to end our talk by going out and buy a vibrator, guys.
I say, if the only thing that vibrates is your cell phone, it's time to go shopping.
Right, there you go. Well, thank you guys for tuning in today for Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Thank you, Dr. Lauren Stryker. You're always a wealth of knowledge and just so much fun to talk to. So please like and subscribe to my podcast and comment if you want to hear more. I will have a Dr. Stryker back at another time. Tell me what you want her to talk about. But until the next episode, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. So please tune in next week. Thank you so much.
If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.